Hi, this is Alex Seitzwald from the National Journal, here with Maren Kogan, also from the National Journal. She had a great piece in the National Journal about JFK conspiracy theories, and Friday is the anniversary of the assassination of Kennedy, so we thought we wanted to talk about some conspiracy theories here, and the conspiracy theories being locked out of Dealey Plaza, where JFK was shot. Really fascinating. So Maren, what did you learn after 50 years of, theorizing back and forth? What did you learn about how JFK was killed and the theories around it?
Well, basically what I focused on in this piece was the very specific fight happening over who gets to be in Dealey Plaza on the 50th anniversary of the assassination, which, as you noted, is this Friday, and how this had sort of become symbolic of larger fights for both the conspiracy theorists or researchers, as they call themselves, and the city of Dallas. The researchers and the conspiracy theorists have been going there every year since 1964. And this year, Dallas, knowing that the international and national media would be watching, decided to hold their own event and essentially shut out all the conspiracy theorists. So it's really become this war over who gets to be in Dealey Plaza on the 50th and who gets to sort of define and own the 50th anniversary of the assassination.
So what was the most surprising or interesting thing you learned about these theories?
I think actually the most interesting thing I learned is how this debate is still raging to this day, not just over the sort of the technical details of the assassination or the conspiracy theories, as you mentioned, but just like the chance to get it out into the public, how much that is still a big deal to the conspiracy theorists. Like I said, this is their last best hope as they see it. But the thing that really, really struck me was Dallas's sensitivity 50 years after the assassination. I knew a little bit about how Dallas was sort of given the inauspicious nicknamed City of Hate after, and it became sort of known as this hotbed of political extremism. And I understood that that was really controversial at the time, but I didn't really think that that had carried on to this day. And the evidence that I saw based on my reporting and talking to the city was that people are still really sensitive, and they sort of see this as their opportunity to show the world, not just the country, but the world, that the city is a very different place.
Yeah, and they don't want the conspiracy theorists there to kind of taint it, I imagine. Or at least.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like I said, this has been going on since 1964. This sort of early left-wing newspaper owner named Penn Jones Jr., he owned a small Texas newspaper, and he would go to the Grassy Knoll each year starting in 1964 to hold a moment of silence and to raise awareness about, his idea that the assassination was a conspiracy. And as the years went by, it sort of became this almost spiritual event for people to go and sort of connect and gather together and see that, there were other people that felt like them. They could leaflet people as they were walking by. Occasionally, though, there were, sort of more circus-like elements. You had people sort of walking around, impersonating Jack and Jackie. I remember reading an anecdote about a guy sort of driving around the plaza with them popping out of coffins. So
wow.
There's a reason why, the city of Dallas wanted to sort of take over and make sure this event was tightly controlled. It's just been really hurtful for the people who, have been going for the last 45 years who all of a sudden can't go this year.
Yeah. We talk about this and we call them conspiracy theorists, and that's obviously a derogatory term, and it's usually used to dismiss people who hold views alternative to the official narrative, as it's often called. But polls actually show that most people don't believe the official narrative, which is from the Warren Commission report. And I know from talking to you a little bit about this that it's changed your thinking about the assassination a little bit. So talk a little bit about how, doing the reporting and the research and really getting knee deep into this changed your thinking about this.
Well, I would say it didn't necessarily change what I think about the assassination, which is I've learned how much I don't know, but I think I sort of felt that way from the very beginning. But I do think that we in the media tend to sort of lump all of these people together and dismiss them all as crazy. And I know that that's really, really frustrating for them. And in the case of the Kennedy, in the case of the Kennedy assassination, not all conspiracy theorists are created equal. There are researchers and there are journalists like your old colleague, Jefferson Morley, who have been doing investigative reporting and sort of trying to connect some dots without making any sort of grand judgments or theories about what really happened. But those people tend to get overwhelmed by the crazier conspiracy theories. And the other problem that they face is that they're really seen as the sort of original generation of all of the conspiracy theorists that are around today, whether it's the Sandy Hook truthers or the 9/11 truthers. Yeah. And that is also a really, really debilitating problem for them. So I tried to treat them like humans, which is, you know, a good way to treat your sources, I think. But if it confirmed for anything for me, it was just that there's so much more to learn. I mean, there are people who study this who specialize not just in ballistics or in, you know, anti-Castro Cubans in Miami at the time, but there are people who study just the presidential limo. You know, it gets so granular, and people spend their entire lifetimes on them that, you know, for me, I thought it was really good to focus on something that was new and was currently happening and sort of symbolic of something larger than to try to just lose myself in, like, the minutiae of each conspiracy theory. Because, you know, some people who have done that, Gerald Posner, for example, wrote Case Closed, 640-page anti-conspiracy tome. Vincent Bugliosi wrote Reclaiming History, 1,600-page. You know, so you could just spend forever and ever and ever digging through this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but I think we'd be remiss to not at least touch a little bit on the theories themselves. And I mean, I was just reading something on CNN, an interview with a guy who's is kind of the prime debunker, or one of the prime debunkers out there of a lot of these conspiracy theories. And there was, he even admits, and he says, you know, there's a lot of questions that still remain, because the Warren Commission is just universally considered now to have been, you know, a kind of rushed job full of problems. Larry Sabato, the University of Virginia professor, just came out with a new book, which is, he's a, you know, really well-respected academic, kind of a mild-mannered political prognosticator by day. And he doesn't advance any particular theory, but everyone agrees that the commission is just full of holes. And that's where a lot of these people come in. So, you know, if you could just talk a little bit about why people doubt the commission and some of the problems with it.
Yeah, and I will say, Larry, to his credit, you know, I've read a little bit of his book. He does not treat the conspiracy theorists and the researchers as all part of the same group. You know, he distinguishes some people who have done good reporting and research on this over the last 10 or 15, 20 years, Jefferson Morley included. But, you know,
Jefferson
other people,
Morley, a former Washington Post editor, Salon editor, who's spent years writing about this. But go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, other people have sort of touched on this better than I have. But I think the initial sort of Warren Commission, they released 26 volumes of it, right? And there were so many questions about it, and there were so many more government documents to be released, that it helped sort of fuel a lot of conspiracy theories from people. And then, you know, the House Select Committee on Assassinations in the 70s concluded that it was likely not Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. So this only sort of fueled more controversy. And then you go all the way up to 1991 with Oliver Stone's JFK that sort of highlighted that there were still a bunch of government documents to be released. This caused a huge public backlash and the conspiracy theories to rise again. And so finally, Congress passed the JFK Records Act, which mandated the release of all government documents by 2017. But there's still something like 1,100 documents, CIA documents, about the Kennedy assassination that aren't out yet. And so these things sort of continue to, you know, cause controversy and cause people to question the government narrative, because it still hasn't come out. And we're on the 50th anniversary. We don't have every single document out yet.
Yeah, and they were under a lot of political pressure from the Johnson administration to conclude a report and to kind of move forward, which I can totally understand. You know, if you're President Johnson, the country has just faced this hugely traumatic event, and you need to kind of take control and establish your legitimacy and move forward, and you don't want to get caught up in a debate about, you know, what happened to JFK. You want to move forward with your agenda. So I can understand where that's coming from, but it kind of set this precedent that we'll see in conspiracy theories again and again and again of the government, you know, withholding documents, being not totally transparent, and any time that they're not, which is just the nature of any government or any large organization, they're always going to withhold documents. But anytime they do that, it leads people to assume, well, if you're hiding something, you know, you must be hiding something devious or malevolent or something
right.
like that.
Right, and I think your point that there are good reasons for the government to have wanted to solve this and settle this and move on is totally valid. But again, this is, you know, it's interesting when I asked Oliver Stone about it, and a lot of the people that I talk to about this, why this matters so much, is they say that it was the beginning of cynicism in American politics, that this was sort of the first time people started to think, well, maybe I can't trust my government. Yeah. And obviously that continued through the 60s and 70s, Watergate being a particularly low point, but continues to this day. And so that can be seen as one reason why, you know, these conspiracy theories exist to this day and are considered sort of, they can trace their lineage back to the JFK conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I really think of the JFK conspiracy theories as the word conspiracy theory. And the term conspiracy theory actually predates the JFK assassination, but it's really where it came to mean what it means today, you know, a derogatory term for people who see a conspiracy. And it's literally what people who question the Warren narrative were advancing. They were literally saying that there was a conspiracy of someone, you know, the CIA, the mob, the Soviets, whoever, literally a conspiracy and not just Lee Harvey Oswald. That was their main contention, was that it was not the lone wolf guy. And it kind of set all the parameters that we see today of the government being like the subject of the conspiracy theory, you know, that many of the theories propose that he did it. And even RFK and Jackie Kennedy and LBJ, they all had their own theories, and they were not completely, they believed the Lee Harvey Oswald narrative completely. And then also the fact that the government sometimes engages in real conspiracy theories that are proven, you know, like Operation North Woods, I think we have to talk about, which was an actual real Pentagon plot to stage a terrorist attack in the United States in order to create a impetus to invade Cuba. This is the original false flag.
Right.
And this is what happened. You know, they were planning this right before JFK got assassinated. JFK put the kibosh on it, which apparently angered people.
Go
ahead.
This is part of the, you know, this is one of the conspiracy theories that, you know, once he put the kibosh on it, they decided, okay, we're going to do it. And now he's the target.
Right. And so the, you know, the government it doesn't exactly have its hands clean here. It can't exactly say, you know, that it's crazy to assume that the government or that small sections of the government, the kind of most, credible, if we want to call it that, conspiracy theory is that it's not the CIA or, you know, the Pentagon, but a small cabal within them. You can't exactly say that's crazy when they have engaged in thinking like this. And that's
right.
Why it really complicates things to just assume that anybody is insane to think that the government would actually do something like that, because they did plan something like that. They didn't do it.
Right. Right. That's absolutely true. It's totally, you know, like 60s, 70s era were a wild time in the CIA. And, so it, you know, it's difficult to say that it's totally outlandish or absurd. I mean, there are conspiracy theories about JFK that just have basically no basis in fact. There are some that, you know, his Secret Service agent accidentally shot him and then they covered it up. You know, there's a lot of stuff about Lyndon Johnson, you know, having him killed. And, you know, there's a former lover of Lyndon Johnson's, so she says, who's still out there and still claims that he confessed to her that he was involved. So, you know, there are just like a million different ideas. There's the idea that they were actually going for Governor Connally and not
right.
for JFK. So, you know, it just goes on and on and on. But I would say, the sort of, if there's a mainstream JFK conspiracy theory, it is this idea that it was some sort of national security plot, whether that's on behalf of the CIA or some small, you know, group of people within the CIA.
So what do you think the kind of appeal here? Because there's some kind of really strong, almost like magnetic, people get obsessed with these things. And you talk about in your story, there's one guy who says that he realized he could never get married because he would be more obsessed with the president's dead body than his wife's living one. You know, there are people who dedicate their whole lives. They spend money and give up their careers. What is so compelling about this? You know, why do people spend so much time trying to get into
this? That's the question that's interesting to all of us who don't, you know, who don't entirely get it. Although I think you and I have both discussed just how fascinating we find this stuff and how we can sort of understand why people get so obsessed with it. It's kind of similar to the reporter instinct. But, no, I put this question to a lot of them, a lot of the people who have spent their lives researching this, and I just asked them why. And they had a number of different answers. You know, it was sort of both obvious and inexplicable to them. Some of them inherited it. Their fathers or maybe their grandfathers were really interested in it, and now they're part of the new generation of people who do this research. You know, for some of them, they met, you mentioned the guy, David Lifton, who decided never to marry because he'd always be more interested in the president's dead body than a wife's living one. But there are also people who met and got married on the original message boards. You know, if you're interested and you're curious in investigating stuff and exposing wrongdoing, then it's a very appealing thing. But the reason I think for a lot of them that this holds such huge importance is back to what Oliver Stone said, that they think that this is the beginning of the moment that Americans lost trust in their government, and it continues up to this day. So they're still, you know, they're still, they don't think that this is a past issue. This is a sort of present issue for them. It still continues, and it sort of continues in everything. So,
yeah, I mean, it's so important. I'd add my own theory, conspiracy theory, maybe here.
Yeah, please.
Which is that I think a lot of these, not every conspiracy theory, but a lot of them are about a search for meaning. It's almost like a fable. I mean, the idea that's, you know, some random guy, Lee Harvey Oswald with a gun, was able to kill the most important, powerful, beloved man in the world, or one of the most beloved men in the world. It just doesn't seem right. It can't be right, you know, that this horrible, tragic thing happened to an entire country because of one single nobody guy. It just can't be right. So it's this quest to assign meaning, like some kind of bigger reason for it, that there was some bigger purpose for what was going on here, even if it was a malevolent one. And I think it's the same thing you saw with the Sandy Hook killing, where it's just, it's too scary to believe in randomness and that some crazy guy with a gun killed all these kids. You want it to be part of some bigger thing, a new world order, conspiracy, whatever it is. Even if it's a malevolent evil force out there, at least it's one thing you can point to and maybe you can stop it and it assigns some kind of meaning. But it, like the randomness is just too scary. And I think that's what a lot of these conspiracies are trying to get. They're trying to apply order and meaning to a inherently chaotic scene.
Right. I think that's absolutely 100% true in the case of the Oswald, you know, lone gunman theory. It's just impossible for people to believe that this sort of random, pathetic guy could have killed someone so important and changed the course of American history so much. Mm. But, you know, I'm curious to talk to you because I know you've done a ton of reporting on the, like, more modern conspiracy theories. And so I'm curious if you could go through some of them that you've covered, and does that same principle apply to the more... you mentioned Sandy Hook, which seems like a good example, but tell me about some of the other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, JFK kind of is the grandfather theory, because it's where they all came from. But the modern ones really started after 9/11 and even before that in the 90s, really. And it's the kind of big ones, the ones espoused by Alex Jones and other people like him, and that you find on message boards and stuff. There's a meta theory here, which is like that there is this New World Order conspiracy, which is essentially the elites of, you know, it doesn't matter about nationality or race or whatever. There's this cabal of elites who are secretly pulling the strings behind everything. And this is the Illuminati or the Bilderbergs or the Freemasons or whoever. These are, this is all kind of manifestation of the same idea, which is, goes back, that kind of idea, you know, of course, goes back forever. You have the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the anti-Semitic tract that was really influential for Hitler. So that's, you know, a really common thing in conspiracy theories. But the newer version is this New World Order, and that basically everything is through the lens of false flag, and it all goes back to Operation North Woods, which we talked about earlier, which was a real case of the Pentagon planning an actual false flag attack. And a false flag is the idea of where a government creates a terrorist attack on their own people as an impetus to do something. So it could be to invade a foreign country or to impose martial law on their own people or something like that. So in the minds of these people who tend to be, a lot of people call them right wing, but it's not really fair to say that because it's at a point where in the political spectrum where things kind of blend together and the extreme right and the extreme left blend together. So you have people who are like sympathetic to the militia movement and also sympathetic to the Occupy movement and the Ron Paul people with the kind of, you know, far left people all kind of merging together. Just the thing that unites them is a complete distrust of government and a belief that government would be capable of bringing down the World Trade Center, blowing up Oklahoma City, federal building, you know, basically every attack since then, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, these could all be viewed as a means to scare the populace, to keep them in control, to make them more willing to have a larger police state, you know, the TSA, and it's just this creeping kind of police state that's taking over everything. That's like the grand theory. So it's really interesting because then everything becomes a piece of that,
right?
And it's no longer like one theory, you know. And I think it's wrong to think of it as conspiracy theories as distinct things. They all kind of blend together. And the social science research here is really interesting. If you believe one conspiracy theory, you're far more likely to believe another conspiracy theory, even if they're conflicting. There was a study in the UK about Princess Diana's death, which of course there are, you know, a million conspiracy theories about. And if somebody who believes that it was, you know, Prince Charles who killed her is also likely to believe that it was Prince Charles' enemies who killed her, as long as it's not the official narrative, they're willing to believe it. And I think it just taps into a really deep distrust of government. That's it's a deeply American thing, but it's also just a deeply human thing, and goes back to that desire to try to like understand the world and this, which is inherently not understandable for most people, and to apply some kind of logic behind it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It does seem like a very American thing. I agree with that. But it would be interesting to know if there are like what the Bulgarian conspiracy theories are, right? They must exist. We always say it's a very American thing, but paranoia, I'm sure, is not, you know, is not a solely American characteristic.
It's not unique at all. I mean, there are Americans might be more fond of conspiracy theories, and there are poll after poll that show a majority of Americans believe some conspiracy theory out there. I mean, whether it's that, you know, vaccines give you autism or water fluoridation makes you dumb on the kind of left, you know, the Whole Foods Prius driving kind of set, or, mm-hmm. You know, 9/11 stuff, or moon landing, you know, whatever it might be, UFOs. But it's not a uniquely American thing. And the Muslim world has all kinds of conspiracy theories. And you find them especially in authoritarian countries where there's no independent media. So you can't trust what the government is telling you. So you have to invent alternative theories there. And I think that's like why it's dangerous to just assume that all conspiracy theorists are nut jobs, because there are, you know, members of Congress are conspiracy theorists. This is going to be controversial, but a large portion of the Republican Party are conspiracy theorists when it comes to something like climate change, which they assume is a vast hoax perpetrated on the American people by the scientific community, or that the media is a vast conspiracy of left-wing activists in the pocket of the Obama White House doing whatever they say. Those are conspiracy theories in their most fundamental, basic shape. So these things are really central to every, you know, to the political process. And I don't think it's unique to America. But the one thing that I will add that is probably more American is the role of Hollywood here. And these things are fascinating to everyone, even if you don't believe them, just because they're amazing narratives. I mean, they're just so cool.
Right.
And they're great stories, and it's like unlocking these puzzle pieces. I mean, you can just look at the success of Dan Brown's novels, or the Bourne Identity series, or, you know, X-Files. Basically, any movie that involves the CIA is going to involve a conspiracy theory of one kind. Even the new Star Trek movie is essentially a conspiracy theory where Khan, the bad guy, actually turns out to be the creation of the guy who sent them to kill Khan. But the point is, when you consume these kinds of media, it trains you to think in that way. You know, you believe, or at least you're primed to believe that these things can be real and can exist.
Yeah. You mentioned a majority of Americans believe in some sort of conspiracy theory, and to me, I know that that's true because a majority of Americans believe that the government covered up what really happened to JFK.
Yeah.
But is that the case? You know, and that has been true since right after the assassination. But then I think after the Warren Commission report came out, I think a majority believed that, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, but it's shifted back, especially after Oliver Stone's movie, which speaks to the power of Hollywood. I mean, that movie had tremendous impact in terms of public perception and even led to the passing of legislation. But in terms of some of the fringier, or they seem fringier to me, conspiracy theories that you've covered, the Sandy Hook truthers, the 9/11 truthers, What is public perception of those conspiracy theories like? Is it a surprisingly large number of people who believe those things, or is it still relatively small?
Well, it depends what would be surprising. I mean, depending on the specific thing, it's up to like 20% for a lot of them, which is pretty big when you think about it, and it's not one type of people. I mean, there are people who are hardcore conspiracy theorists who will believe American community. There's conspiracy theories that AIDS and the crack cocaine epidemic were like the CIA sending these things out to keep the black community down. And those numbers are really high. I don't know them off the top of my head, but it's really surprisingly high among African Americans. And again, not to go too far back off topic, but here's another case of the government perpetrating an actual conspiracy, so it's not so crazy for them to believe. You can kind of understand why they believe that. You know, they did spy on Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and it did infiltrate all these, you know, black liberation movements. J. Edgar Hoover once said he wanted to prevent the rise of a black messiah. There were the Tuskegee experiments where they did horrible, inhumane things on black people. So it's obviously, it is crazy in a way to believe that the CIA would send AIDS into the black community, but you can kind of start to understand why those numbers are so high.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, Alex, I have one question for you, which is, where were you on November 22nd, 1963?
I was on the grassy... I was nowhere. I was nowhere, I swear. The black helicopters are coming.
Because you hadn't been born?
I had not been born.
Me neither. But it's kind of remarkable that, you know, it's been 50 years and we're still talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely wanted to talk about that. I mean, where do you see these things going? Do you think that our kids will, the majority of them, you know, will it continue? The majority of them will be doubtful of the Warren Commission report? Or will we know? Like, when these documents come out in 2017, will there be a definitive take on what happened?
Well, so I should say Jeff Morley thinks that with the release of the last documents in 2017, if they can actually get them, he thinks that there's a very good chance of a breakthrough, and he feels pretty confident that they're on the sort of cusp of figuring out once and for all what really happened. As for what our kids would think, our kids' generation, and I should say regarding the release of those documents, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think Jeff is really smart, but he's the one who's been spending years on this. So I don't know that we're any closer. I know that polling shows that I think 77% of Americans, according to a CBS poll, don't think we'll ever really know the truth. And I kind of get the conspiracy theorist's point when they say that this was their last best hope for getting the public interested in this case again, because I don't think after the 50th, there's going to be the same sort of interest in the case. I mean, the first generation of researchers, a lot of them have died. And a lot of the people who, you know, were sort of young kids at the time and then got interested are getting much older. And then you have, you know, our generation who hasn't experienced it at all, who has only maybe heard about it in history class in high school and then in college. So we really are sort of slipping away from that time when people had a really real visceral connection to it. And I can't imagine the next couple of generations caring about it quite like, you know, the generations before ours, even if it is a really, really interesting case.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you know, how much do we care about Warren Harding or, you know, how Garfield was assassinated? It's just with time, it inevitably fades. There is something about that era and that man specifically, JFK, that like looms so large in the American imagination, or at least does now. And I wonder if that will continue, if that was just a uniquely interesting and important era. And it was, you know, for a lot of reasons, the civil rights movement and the explosion of
it's a really culture. Good question.
But yeah, but will we continue to care? One thing I will add is that polls show that young people are more perceptive or more inclined to believe conspiracy theories than older people. Maybe no one really knows exactly for sure, but there's speculation that it's just growing up in an era when not trusting the government was taken for granted, or, you know, where things are so polarized that you just don't believe the president. At least half the country is not going to believe the president, no matter what.
Right. Well, maybe they're likely to believe it, but less likely to actually do any research into it, because I think there are going to be plenty of other things. I mean, there are plenty of other things that have happened in our lifetimes that they, you know, will cook up conspiracy theories about.
That seems absolutely right. And maybe there's a point where we're no longer outraged by, or we're no longer that outraged by the government doing things. You know, it just becomes accepted after this far after Watergate, that it's no longer shocking. So to go back 50, 60, 70 years to JFK just might not really seem that worth it.
Yeah, right. There's the segment of the population that doesn't get outraged and the segment of the population that's always outraged. And it's hard for like one singular event to sort of pierce through. Although, you know, again, it's hard to imagine something like the assassination of JFK ever happening today. I mean, you think about a president driving in an open car around a city square. It's just totally unimaginable without like massive security.
Yeah, and it's really shocking that it was allowed to happen like that.
Some people say it's surprising that it didn't happen sooner, given, you know, his proclivity for just jumping into a crowd.
Right. Absolutely. But that still gets to back to the thing where it just in your gut, it feels like there has to be some bigger reason here. Like, how could this possibly happen? How could he be allowed to just drive around in an open limousine? I mean, I know it happened before that, but it just doesn't make sense on like a basic level. And you're always going to try to find, you know, what really happened, because it just is the answer, the official answer just isn't satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, maybe with that, we'll leave it there and carry on until the 75th anniversary.
Sounds good. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Maren.